Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. This series is brought to you by Altruist, the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be. Check out humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. Now let's get into today's episode.
I'd like to welcome you all to a special edition of the Human Advisor Podcast, where I did a live Zoom meeting with Carl Richards, Emlyn Miles Mattingly, and Desarte Yardway. In this conversation, we address all of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt around volatile markets and also all of us being affected by COVID-19. In the conversation, you'll hear us talk about how we are having conversations with our current clients and also how we are addressing the conversation and the issues with family, friends, and those closest to us. You'll also get a small treat because Carl Richards gives us two sketches that he's known and famous for. And you'll also get a perspective from all four of us and some takeaways that you can share with friends, that you can share with family as we all work together to get through these volatile times. Please listen, please watch, please share, and we'll see you on the next one. I appreciate you. All right. Well, thank you for everyone for coming on. I could not be more excited for what you are about to witness, for what we are about to do. This is really neat because this is, you know, the first edition and live edition of the Human Advisor Podcast. So right away, let me give a big shout out to my Altruist family. So just so folks understand here, all of us have our bios and backgrounds online. You can go and look that up. I think the times that we're in are so important here. So we want to get right to work. We want to get right to giving. We want to be right to being thoughtful and doing what we do best and providing guidance and healing in this time. Just so you understand how things will go really quickly, we'll just get an opening statement and a perspective from all of us that are here. We'll go right to Emlyn after I'm done here. And then the majority of the conversation will be me talking to Carl and just getting his perspective and his background in these times. And if you're not familiar with him, you will be amazed at how simple he makes complex and volatile times. So super grateful. We'll get to all of the gratitude and all that stuff at the end, because if I was to start that, we'd never finish. So before I kick it to Emlyn, I do want to say this. Thank you for everyone that's come on. I want to make sure people understand this is a broad conversation. There are so many people in here. And this is what we wanted. This was the goal. This was the objective, to have people from all perspective, all walks of life, but more importantly, everyday American that doesn't get access the way they should to financial advice, financial education, and more importantly, a calming word, right, in times where we're all nervous, we're all anxious. So thank you for everyone that's come on. And right now, what we're going to do is go to Emlyn, who is going to introduce himself and talk a little bit about we're dinging all over the place. You know, a little bit about his background and what he's seen in the market, and then we'll get the conversation started. You'll hear from Desarte next. That smooth, chocolate, dark, velvety voice you hear will be him and not the rest of us. And then we'll start the conversation with Carl. So, Emlyn, nice to have you, man.
Hey, it's tough to follow that up with, the smooth, dark, chocolatey voice that I think I have. But, we won't even go there. But just wanted to say, first of all, thank everybody for joining the call today. Thanks, Carl, for reaching out to us in these incredible times. And I've said it before. I said it on the Altruist podcast when I spoke last time, but I thought it was just a great thing to say. You know, in the industry, a lot of times we get the numbers right and we get the people wrong. And so I think at this time, we're just going to start focusing on the people. And that's pretty much it. The conversation is going to be about the people today. And I can't wait to jump right in. So I don't want to delay it anymore. But let's make sure we get the people right today.
Hey, man. So good. The numbers right, the people wrong. So good.
Amen. Desarte, talk to us, King.
Desarte Yarnway again. I'm so grateful to be on the podcast with these three gentlemen and everybody that has joined on. I live by a simple principle, and that principle is called push-pull. So I'll explain that to you very quickly. When you're a person, an anomaly essentially is what we are, right? Tyrone, Emlyn, in this industry, right? When you don't see our faces on a day-to-day basis, you have a responsibility to do two things. The first is to push those that are ahead of you, right, forward and to pull those behind you through that same door. Now, with these market conditions, we have a demographic of people that are just not getting served. They're being overlooked, they're underserved, and they need this advice the most. So it's our responsibility to really pull these people right behind us through this door, give them the financial education, give them the support, and give them our helping hands in the best way that we can. And this is not going to come through high-level market analysis, talking about PEs, market capitalization, or where the market is. This is going to come through the bare-bones basic advice that we seek to give. And I think that in talking to Carl on my podcast, he was like, how can I help? How can I help with this initiative? Because I see that you and Emlyn are pulling a lot of weight right now. So Carl, we're extremely grateful for you. We're extremely grateful for this opportunity. And if you take anything away from this conversation, know that we all, no matter what skin tone, religion, creed, or ethnic background you are, we all have that same responsibility to push those forward and pull those behind us. So I'm super excited about this conversation. Carl, let's get it. Tyrone, you ready?
Let's do it. Let's go. Mr. Richards, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Right? Like, that's all. I mean, let's just start there. Thanks for, I've had conversations with each of you three privately, and it's been amazing. And I think it would be, to me, it would be interesting to talk about, and let me just real quickly, some logistical things. Remember, there's a Q&A button down at the bottom. If you've got questions as we talk, throw them in the Q&A, and we'll all sort of be manning the Q&A. And we hopefully will have some time at the end where we can just have some discussions around questions that are there. So use that. Keep using the chat. You're free to use that as well. But so you know what I would like to start with is, what do we do when the plan blows up? You know, I think financial advice, generally speaking, and I think we've also got to get really clear that we all are aware that the traditional financial services industry has not served many of us very well, right? Like, we're all aware of that. We're aware that there's some skepticism and distrust of the industry, speaking broadly, and rightly so, right? But that's not what we're about here. And so we just want to, like, when I use the word industry or advisor or planner, I'm sort of using all those things interchangeably. But what I mean is real financial advice. And real financial advice is about the people, right? Like, it's about serving people and making sure we align what they say is important to them with their use of money, right? That's what we're trying to do, whether that's spending, how we spend our money, whether we get lucky that we can save some, and then eventually if we can invest some, we're trying to align that with what we say is important to us. That's what it's all about. And so what do you do? And I think many of us are in this situation. Traditionally, a good financial advisor has been pretty good at helping people stick with a plan, right? We lay out a plan. It may involve something like crazy, like a budget, right? It may involve an investment plan. And then your job is to kind of like help people stick with the plan. But what do you do when the plan blows up? And what I mean by that is, like, what we've seen in the last couple of weeks and what I think we're going to see more of is a really good designed plan. Suddenly, mom's out of work, right? The restaurant shut down. Like, what do we do then? So that's kind of where I'd like to start. Any thoughts? Or would you like me just to keep riffing on it?
So I think one of the things that's important here, and one of the things that I do to all guests on the podcast, is that as financial advisors, as those of us in financial services, we have a tendency to throw around a lot of jargon, things that make sense to us. So let's go all the way back, right? We say when the plan blows up, and there are a lot of people on here didn't have one in the first place, right? So when we talk about plan, what do we mean when we say plan? And then ultimately, what does it mean when that plan implodes?
Yeah, and it's funny because even you saying many of us didn't have one implies that I didn't do a good job of explaining it. Like, I do not mean a 2-inch thick, you know, paperweight that is going to keep the door open. Right. I don't necessarily even mean a financial plan. I could mean a simple budget. I could mean mom brings home the paycheck and we divide it into envelopes and we spend this much on groceries and this much on keeping the lights on, right? Like, that, whatever your plan, speaking really broadly, whatever your plan is for taking care of your money,
right?
in many cases we're finding, right? And some of us, the only plan is, man, I just got to survive.
Yep.
Well, if that was the plan 2 weeks ago, I would imagine for most of us, that plan has gotten harder, right? It hasn't gotten easier. So, because there are plenty of places that you can go search for answers about how to get help with, your rent payment, or where to find the best credit card, or how to open a bank. Like, those tactical things are really challenging. And Emlyn and Desarte and you, Tyrone, like, you guys know those answers, right? How to help somebody. But what's really, really hard right now is, well, how do I even deal with it, man? Like, how do I keep my head above water? How do I not allow this to destroy me or my family or my relationship with the kids? Or how do I not do something stupid in a moment of panic or fear? And that's kind of what I want to talk a little bit about, right? Yeah. Is how are people feeling about this? What do they do right now?
Right. So, yeah, I let's go back to that. But before we do, again, to start to Emlyn, anything on that? Did anything that's timely that you had a conversation with clients right now, or something that sticks out? Because obviously we've all been answering text messages, emails on the phone like crazy. So anything you guys want to point out and go in the direction where Tamar wants to take the conversation?
I think that when I'm talking to clients, I always, you know, I think this is why it's important to how we begin the conversation or begin the engagement with our clients. When we're talking about, you know, if you're spending time with your client talking about the values that they have, values shouldn't be affected by a market, right? Values shouldn't be affected by anything, because these are the values that this person's core beliefs.
Emlyn, real quickly, tell us, yes. Give us an example.
Like, when someone says that their value, you know, I do these value deck cards. When one of them, if their values is family, it doesn't matter if your values have, like just because the market is going crazy, you still value your family, right? You still value, you know, the legacy that you're trying to leave. You still value these things that you have. So I think being able to pull that person back into those values that they stated when you first started working together is going to be so critical, because they're, you know, it's like, well, this was what you told me was important to you when we first started working together. But if you're not spending that time doing that, then you can't use the client's words to calm them down. Right. So that's so important for us to understand in the beginning of the planning process. Now, as things get a little crazy, as they have been here recently, not a little, like, I mean, you know, just it's pretty bad. But I think having that understanding of your client's values is going to be a way to always circle them back and kind of help them respond to what's going on and not react. And we talk about that a lot as well. So that's one thing that I want to make sure that we have done a good job of in the beginning, is laying that foundation with those values. And then from there, you know, just listening and hearing people out. I think as the plan begins to blow up, I'll tell you about a conversation I had with a client briefly. So he calls me and, you know, he's you know, he's concerned, as he should be. And, you know, I didn't get into PE ratios, and we didn't talk about alpha, and we didn't talk about beta. We didn't talk about standard deviation and how many times this happened in the market. All I did is just listen to him. I said, you know, I said, I understand you're scared, and you rightfully so, because you've never seen anything like this. And then I asked him this. I said, I totally understand why you would be worried about your retirement account going up and down. This is the first time you've ever retired, right? And he started laughing. And he's like, yeah, I've never retired before. I said, yeah. So I said, this is kind of, you know, this is uncharted waters where you're at. And he's like, yeah, you know, I didn't really think about that until you said that. And we talked through it, you know, about this is where we're at, how long it's been, what's important to him, how much money he's going to be able to take out of his account, just stuff like that. And after we got off the phone, he said, you know what? Thank you, Emlyn, just for listening to me. I was really worried. But once you put things in perspective, I think we're going to be all right. And I think that's it, you know, just listening and bringing them back to what you talked about in the beginning. And that's it.
Anything, D?
I think that this bull market has made us forget what it feels like to be in this market environment, right? It's been unprecedented. It's been 10 years, just about, of consistent gains climbing to the upside, right? And I think that because of that, advisors haven't given the fundamental advice that we need to sail through these choppy waters. And I think that Inland is pointing at a direction that is really what we need to get back to. Aligning our clients, we call it designing your wealth or wealth by design here at Berkmill Financial Group. Like, what does that look like for you? Because this is going to be the rubric in which we create that plan, right? And really measure ourselves on. So I think that Inland's 100% correct. I think we have to start with values. I think that God gave us two ears and one mouth because we were supposed to listen twice as we talk. And we forgot about that in our industry. And we need to get back to that to be able to properly serve our clients.
So let me, you know, add a couple things there. And then Carl, the floor is yours. One of the things that's really important to me, and again, in these days and times right now, the power of proximity. I said this period, I say this all the time, the power of proximity, getting close to people in their condition, staring them in the eyes and seeing the fear in their eyes, seeing the hunger in their stomachs, being close to people and touching them when things are good. So now when things are bad, you can give a word, you can touch people, you can touch their spirit when they need you now. So those of us, again, that come from the bottom, come from conditions of nothing, we still have family and friends and members of our community that are still in that condition. And right now, two things we take for granted. One, these people have been built on lean times. So they understand what it means to take two, right, and make four. But what they need to understand now is the context of which all of these things that we understand, the stimulus and the treasuries and the QE and all these other things, how do we make that simple for somebody just saying, I got $20 on Monday. I need $100 on Friday. Wednesday, I got to pay something that's $50. The ends don't meet, right? So I think as financial advisors now, the power of proximity, the power of listening, but also, again, when you get proximate, right, my condition changes because the way in which I give is different. The way I give my advice, the way in which I may actually give that person something to do. But more importantly now, right, as I think Carl will elaborate on, when the plan blows up, and no matter what that plan was, I had a plan to have a job tomorrow. I don't anymore. Now what do I do? And that moment, right, and those of us that come from them environments and those circumstances and seeing family go through it, at that point, it's very humbling. And it gets to a point where you say, okay, well, what do I do to survive in this actual moment? And I think as advisors, those of us in financial services, we have a tremendous responsibility now, yes, to give people calm and get them explaining what's going on. But listen, you're gonna get a check for $1,200 at some point. What does your current circumstance look like? What are your expenses, right? How is this going to affect your life now? And use the information that we have and all of the, you know, the experience to help them get through day to day. So that at the end of this, again, if hopefully we can get more people on the other side, because we are going to lose a few that don't have access to a lot of this information that we're sharing here.
Mm. Yeah, so good. So maybe it would be helpful to go through a little bit of sort of like a mental framework for thinking about these problems, right? Because I think it doesn't, I think this is helpful no matter what situation, I think. I guess I don't know the boundary conditions of this model, but I think no matter what situation you find yourself in, this is helpful. So I think we need to understand first, like I think of this as ESPA. This is the sort of model when the plan blows up, I think of it as ESPA. So the first, the E is empathy. Empathy from the perspective of even like yourself, right? Like, and this is a real, this can be a real challenge because we feel like as a father, as a mother, as a parent, our job is to provide for our family. And if that's pulled out from underneath you, you feel, it's easy to feel, and it's almost genetic, right? Like my job is to go bring home meat, right? Like, and I'm not doing it. And it can feel really, 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 I mean, it will, obviously we've seen this. I've seen it in my own life. I've seen it drive me to other self-medicating behaviors, right? Like whatever those things are. And so it starts by just giving yourself a little bit of empathy, like give yourself a break, right? Just a deep breath, right? Slow down a minute and realize like, A, we're, many of us are different places in this problem, but we're all in this together. And we've got to, so a little bit of empathy and then clearly empathy for other people. One of the things I learned, I had a really tough time in 2008, 2009, when the markets got really crazy. Then we had a really huge problem with our, we lived in Las Vegas and the housing market there caused some well, A, some mistakes I made, and B, the housing market combined caused some huge problems for me personally. And one of the things I learned from that was to be much more empathetic about other people. Like, I have no idea what's going on in your life, right? Like, the reason you're spending money the way you are, the reason you're I still have to catch myself occasionally, but judgment out the window, right? So empathy, just a little bit of empathy, give yourself a little bit of empathy. Okay. Number two, S is space, right? Like, when you get punched in the face, your immediate response is to either run or punch back, right? We call that fight or flight. And we all know this, like, stimulus, punch in the face, response, right? And when the stimulus and the response are right, you know, it's like stimulus, response, we're not, there's no room to think. And by creating just a little bit of space, right? Just a little, because we all know, like, what is Mike Tyson's old quote? A plan is great until somebody punches you in the face, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that when you act out of that space, you often do things you regret. And I think you can go further and say, when you act out of that space, you almost never make good decisions. So creating just a little bit of space between the stimulus and the response, like, I only have $20. I don't know, like, breath, a little bit of empathy, a little bit of space. And then we go to P, which is a plan, the plan. And all I mean by plan here, I'm using it really loosely. There's a bunch of research behind this, or in complexity theory and also in military science, around the idea when we are all dealing with this massive amount of uncertainty right now, and it's irreducible, meaning you can't get rid of it. And we're all trying to get rid of it. That's why you're checking Twitter 27,000 times a day. That's why you're checking the news, is you're hoping, and you may not know this, and I don't know this either, but habitually what we're hoping for is that some shaman will show up on the front, on the screen, and tell us what's going to happen, right? Where are the buffalo going to be next week? When's it going to rain? You know, all those old legends that we have, we're looking for somebody to give us certainty. And the truth of the matter is, right now, nobody has it. We're dealing with irreducible uncertainty. So when you're dealing with irreducible uncertainty, how do you act? Well, the only thing, and again, this is from the literature, the only thing to do is guess at the next best step. Right. And when I say next, I mean like micro step. Like, what's the next smallest action I can take? Well, maybe I can call. I think we already had a question about like credit cards or housing, which we'll get to these questions, but maybe I don't know how I'm going to meet my mortgage next month. Okay. That's irreducible uncertainty. I'm going to check the news. I can't find anybody to help me. What's one step I could take? It's one small. Well, maybe I could call the mortgage company and say, what have you got for me? Is there anything in this federal plan that's going to help me? You know, like, or maybe I can ask a friend, right? So whatever it is, next smallest step, that's the plan. But I find that there's nothing, we all want more, and it feels terribly unsatisfactory to not be able to give people more right now. But when we're dealing with conditions of uncertainty that can't go away, the best thing we can do is take a single step forward. Like, get a little space, take a single step forward. Because when you take a step, you get new information, right? Like, physically, if you think about that, everybody's listening, like, when you take a step forward, you get new perspective that wasn't available to you just one foot back. That process of taking that little action will give you new information. And then guess what you have to do? You just reset. Give yourself a little break, take a little space. What's the next step? And in 2008, 2009, when I was in having a really tough time, like, that got me through. Like, just focusing, oh, and one last thing. Well, action is obviously the A, ESPA. Action is just take an action and reset. And then I think the one last thing to keep in mind that we can, I'll pause and we can talk, is control. Okay, when we are in a sort of totally uncertain environment, what we want more than anything is some sense of control. And for many of us, it feels uncontrolled, like, I'm totally out of control. I have no control. That may be actually true. And if that's true, you sit with that feeling for a minute, right? And just, and then we say, like, look, is there anything I can control? Is there anything? Now, this sounds ridiculous, but for me in 2009, I was down to the point where I couldn't think of anything I could control but my own breath, right? Like, that's where I got. I was like, look, but I could take a breath. And like, maybe all you can control is one walk around the block a day. Like, but find something, something that you can control. And then what will happen is that sense of control will grow a little bit, right? You'll be able to say, hey, look, let me analyze the situation and see how bad it is. Where is, like, I've only got $20. Where am I going to get the 100? Who else, where, what else could I do? Is there any, like, the sense of control starts to expand a little bit. And that's all we can do right now, right? Is just look for the little places to give ourselves some empathy, create a little bit of space, come up with some plan of action, take that action and repeat. And if we just keep doing that, we keep doing that. And that's the only way we get through this.
I love that. And you referenced a lot of years there. And I know me and Emlyn have this in common where 2012 was a rough year for both of us. I mean, literally 2012 almost took me out. I woke up one morning and I'm like, this is it. I want to die. I want to commit suicide. I'm done with it. That particular instance. And I know, you know, a lot of that was financial, and a lot of people who do commit suicide is exactly for that reason. But I want to say this. One of the things that I do whenever I sit, especially with clients, and I talk to people about their money, or I asked this on the podcast, and I think it has a lot to do with the way I grew up, is I asked them, well, what is your first, you know, memory of money? Or what is the thing that comes to mind when you hear money? And I think that's important, because right there, that's the best risk tolerance questionnaire you can ask, because that's how people are going to react during times of stress. So I say that to say, knowing someone's background, because think about it. If someone did well in school, they studied, got the good grades, which got them the good job, then they worked hard and it got them the good promotion, and then they lose their job. For the most part, that person was used to things going their way, and now all of a sudden I'm faced with adversity. If someone has struggled all along the way and they've been living on the fringe this whole time, right? I think the conversation is framed with them, and Emlyn brought up a conversation he had. I had a conversation with a young lady who has 5 children. She has no money. Her husband is incarcerated. She had to travel 4 towns over to find toilet paper, right? Now, digging into her condition and knowing where she was, there was nothing I was going to say except for the fact, what do you need now, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in this moment. And she said, money. Right now, as I always say, I can give you money, but if I leave you, I failed you. I got to give you money. And then I have to say, okay, well, what are the processes that you need to follow through just to make sure, one, that 100 can stretch into 200, right? You can kind of make it go as long as possible. But more importantly, okay, well, now how do we help you sustain yourself now that you have a little bit of a buffer? So I just think being very familiar with people's backgrounds. And for me, right, when in 2012, when everything had fallen apart and I'm like, I'm throwing my hands up. This is it. And I felt like I was the strongest mentally capable person in the world, and it had been too much. So I feel like getting very familiar, right, and touching people in a place where they're just like, no, I want to quit, and giving them a reason to sustain, as you said, maybe it is taking one more step. For me, I was like, and the funny thing was, is anyone that knows me, I'm a runner. So I was like, all right, if I'm going to get out this malaise, I'm going to go for a run. I was 5 minutes into my run where I saw the truck coming down the street, and I'm like, yeah, this is it. I'm done. And I stood on the side of the street and the truck was coming. I'm like, I'm jumping. I'm ending it all. I was going through the process of trying to take the world away. And in that moment, it caught me. Right. So, you know, I just think being very familiar with people's background and their personal circumstance, and just, like you said, giving people the space to just vent, let it out, let it go. Right. This sucks. Let them get it all out, and then say, okay, well, what is the best next step we can do right now to make your situation better?
Hey, Kyron, for a minute, I just want to go there for a minute, because nobody said I couldn't interview you. So in that, like just for a second, like, you're standing on the side of the road, mm-hmm. the truck is coming, mm-hmm. and you decide not to. Like, what do you do next? Because I think there, I mean, I've had that moment. I mean, I can remember where I was.
Yeah.
And I bet there are some other people right now that are having that moment. Like, what do you do? What do you do now? What do you do next after that to deal with? Because obviously there's some big problem, some big thing that's weighing on you. We don't have to go into what it is, but like right now, it's pretty easy for us of us to point out. Like, we know what the big problem. What do you, what did you do to get through that?
So it's funny, in that moment when I had accepted the fact that I wanted to die and I could not believe it. And even now I get emotional saying it because I was like, I'm okay in this moment. Like, I want it to end. And again, the background is not for this moment, but you know, I'm sleeping on a floor in a one bedroom apartment with my parents in the projects. I'm 32 years old. I have a torn groin. My dream had just, you know, been shattered. I lost my job. I was in debt. Bank account was empty. And I'm just like, there's nothing left. And if anyone that knows me, my niece is my world. I love her with everything and then some 10 worlds beyond. And I can't piece it together when she's actually walked in and saw me laying on the floor. Her uncle, who was supposed to be this super successful athlete and Wall Street person or whatever, and she walked in and saw me on the floor. I can tell you, it wasn't shortly after that that I was like, this is rock bottom, I'm done. In that moment, I will be honest with you and tell you, it wasn't me. I was just frozen, and people believe in high powers. I believe in God. I believe God held me. And he was like, "You not now. I have work for you to do," which is why I'm sitting here doing this at this moment. But what happened after that is I remember I ran home and I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried. And I'm like, all right, that's the lowest I'm going to be. And then I started to look at my mother and my father. And I'm like, you know what? For all they've been through, for all the stories that they share with me, for all of the things that I have that they don't, let me start putting it together, right? Mm-hmm. Let me start, okay, find a job. Right, put that behind me. And I just really started to focus on where I was. And it helped that I was in the same housing project where my mother grew up when it was 12 of them in a three-bedroom apartment, literally using shelves in a drawer to put babies in. Like, and that's when I realized I had, again, doubled down on my bloodline, what was in me. And I was like, you know what? I come from a legion of fighters, people who've endured. So I realized I just had to endure in that moment. It was going to be very hard. I was going to cry. I was going to be embarrassed. And I just had to keep going. And luckily, right, and this is where I think everyone could do this, is lean on people who are close to you who want to help, who say, who you know, who give you a kind word, who give you a shoulder to cry on. And ultimately, people who say, what do you need? You need a coat. You need some gas in your car. You need money. And that's kind of what I did. And when I realized that I started to do that, show strength myself and be a little vulnerable, people started to pour into me and build up my cup. And that's why I'm able to do that now. But that's literally what it was. I just had to stand and endure and say, you know what? Here's my cross. I'm going to bear it. I'm going to walk with it. And that's ultimately how, you know, it's a slow, hard, painful, tearful, scary, embarrassing walk, but you just got to do it. And hopefully that gives someone a kind word, because again, there was no 800 number. There was no financial plan. There was no financial advisor. There was no therapist, no psychologist. I was done. I was done. And because I was held back, again, it helped me now have the perspective where some people are right there. And if we just give them things and not actually put something in their spirit, we didn't really save them, right? We made it momentary.
Listen, I have a quick input.
Yeah, can I just, let me just tie something up real fast, Emily, and then, yeah, or the Sartre, who was that? I should know by the voice.
The Sartre.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome. So
spelled the screen.
I just want to tie this up because, well, first of all, thank you, right? Like for sharing that and going there with all of us. But one of the things I want to tie up is back to what Emily said earlier, that if, and I think this is really important, this is a like something everybody listening could do, like take out a piece of paper when you're done with this and just have a conversation with yourself, a friend, a family, by yourself, it's fine. And write down your, like Simon Sinek's work, right? Write down your why. Like, what's there? What's on that piece of paper? For you, it was a niece, right? For me, it was my family and spending time with my community. Like, that's what is on the top of my one-page financial plan. It says, time with my family, mainly outside and serving my community. And if we have that, what Emlyn was pointing at earlier is things get crazy out in the, right? Like, sort of out, think of like out on the branches of a tree, right? When the wind blows, that branches are moving like crazy. And what Emlyn was pointing at just intuitively, which is so beautiful, is, and what you did is pulling yourself back to the trunk, or maybe even deeper, the roots, right? Remembering who your family was, remembering like all the things our grandmother said to us, right? Remember your good name, remembering who your family was, remembering why you're doing this in the first place. Those things, what Emlyn said earlier, I just can't emphasize this enough. Those things they tend not to change, mm-hmm. right? And then we can then build on top of that. We can build a budget on top of that. We can build an investment plan on top of that. We can build a financial plan on top of that. But those are the things when it gets crazy, like it is right now, we can go, oh, wait. Why am I standing way out here on the branches? Let me go back to the roots here real quickly and reconnect with that. So thanks. Jump in.
I truly think that our responsibility in this financial profession, specifically being financial advisors, is to be on one end an investment person, right? Telling our clients about the market, but also a counselor, right? In these rough times. Sometimes your clients just want to come in and lay back on that seat and spill out their lives to you. I think it's a 50-50 split. We are investment counselors. So Tyrone, you've been through tough times, right? Emlyn, you and I, we know each other well. Carl, you just shared a little bit about your personal struggles being in Vegas. How do we, from a financial standpoint, right, with a plan, and from a qualitative or personal standpoint, give some of those characteristics, this grit to our clients to endure these rough times, right? I had a running back coach at the University of California. He's been through it all, adopted in the system, came out. He had troubles with drugs and alcohol, and he would say, on the field, you have to take up some of my personality. I need you to get nasty out there. I need you to endure. I need you to go the distance. So in some ways, as advisors, we have this responsibility to our clients, or else they're going to make brash decisions at the worst times in the market cycle. So I guess that's a question for you, Carl, but I'm pretty sure either of the gentlemen can answer this question. How do we share that? How do we give them that hope, right? And a little bit of our personalities in this time.
Can I jump in? Emlyn, you got something. Go ahead.
I was just thinking that a lot of times when you're dealing with your clients, a lot of your clients are going to be very similar to you. So I think sharing your own personal experience and letting the clients into your life is going to be the perfect way for them to see how you dealt with difficult times give them a lead to follow, right? I think you go through these things, you have defining moments, right? Either you define the moment or the moment defines you. And so when you are able to step back and align your values, your principles, your plan, then you can define that moment, right? We have this COVID-19 thing going on. Market's going crazy. What is going to be the aftermath of this? Did you define that moment, or did the moment define you? And the moment will be defined by the decisions that you made in it. And here we are. It is our time to be the guide to our client and guide them through this. But you only trust someone that you know. And if your clients don't know you, then they're not going to trust you to guide them through this tough, difficult time. So that's what I would focus on. Like when I'm talking to my clients, we just had a baby today. Let's see, she's 22 days today, 22 days old. And my clients, when they call me, all this stuff is going on. And so in the middle of everything, all the craziness, they're like, oh, wait, you had a baby, didn't you? How's the baby going? And it really, like, it's funny to see how their attitude changes once they get, like, something that really matters. They know how important family is to me. Yeah. And now they're saying, okay, well, he's working on stuff with his family. This is going to last a lot longer than this COVID-19. This is going to last a lot longer than the market. This is more important than PE ratios. This is more important than alpha, beta, or any other things that we use, standard deviation, anything that the drawdown, whatever we're going to talk about, sure. Because now I've become a person.
Yeah.
And how is this person going through this difficult time? And so once again, redefining that moment and saying, I'm going to define this moment. The moment will not define.
Mm. Yeah, that's amazing. You know what I'd love to just talk about real quickly is like all people that might be listening that don't have access to an advisor or a planner. Like what do you do? And I think there's this really, and you mentioned something that like we need to guide clients. Mm-hmm. And I love, there's two words that I really like, guide and lead. And I think when you're a guide or a leader, you accept the fact that you don't necessarily know exactly where to go, right? Like when I think of a guide, I think of like, I spent a lot of time in the mountains. I think of mountain guides. And Tyrone has lots of experience hiking in mountains. I know that because I've seen the videos. I've seen the videos. So Tyrone knows all about hiking in mountains.
The first one, by the way.
Yeah. So, but the idea is like, just because we went over 11 mountain passes and every time over the 11, every time there's been a mountain lake, doesn't mean over the 12th there will be another mountain lake, right? But if we get there and there's not, I've got all these tools in the backpack. Right. And what does that like practically look like on the ground right now is both for advice and then for people who don't have access to a financial advisor. Like you, I think at some point we've just got to stand up and be leaders a bit.
Yep.
And what that means is we've got to say, look, I on the ground, like I'm in the neighborhood. I've been doing things the way my parents did them and everybody around me. I've got no examples. Like this is actually true for me. Maybe a little bit careful, like, but I, yeah, to a large degree, I didn't have examples of what I wanted to be. My parents were divorced when I was 8. My dad is amazing, right? Like he's been around, but not really. And anyway, I want to be careful there because my dad's amazing, right? But I had to figure a lot of this stuff out on my own. And I think at some point we just have to go, look, you don't have to be like the other people in the neighborhood. You don't have to be like your parents. You don't have to be like your, like, you can make a decision to chart a different course. And what that looks like is right now, how do I stand up? Like right now, how do I look somebody in the eyes? How do I look my wife, my kids in the eyes and say, look, I know you're scared. And between you and I, so am I, but you're coming with me, right? Like you and I hand in hand, we're going this way. And I only know one step, like the old Indiana Jones movies, right? I got to take one step and then the platform's going to show up. But we're going to, and like, we can all probably point to a fundamental belief. This is what faith is, right? Like you're going to trust God to make a decision into the, he's not going to tell you what the plan, like your biggest problem, Carl, somebody said this to me, is your biggest problem is you want to know the end before you even start. Mm-hmm. That's not the plan. That's not called faith. So really at this point, I think we have to say, look, you and me, and sometimes you have to do this for the guy next door. Who just is too overwhelmed with his own problem. They need somebody else next door to walk in and grab him by the scruff of the neck, right? And say, come on, brother, we've got this. Yep. We're going to take one step this way. What's the next phone call we can make? Because you can't see it on your own. You got all sorts of blind spots and you're panicked and nervous. Maybe you need, and so be that guy too, right? Like if you, somebody needs to, we just need to go to each person and say, look, I don't know what to do, but I'm here for you. Let's pick up the phone. Let's figure out what the next step is. Let's make the next phone call. Let's take a step. Let's have some faith. I don't know where we're going, brother, but I'm with you, right? And let's go together. And I think that's what we need to do more of. And we need to realize we're not defenders anymore of an outdated map.
Yeah.
Right? The map's blown up. Now we need to be guides in a changing landscape, and guides take people by the hands and say, come with me. We're going to be okay. We got this. And sometimes they say that even when they don't know for sure that they're telling the truth, that they're like, it's rational overconfidence.
Carl, right? I wrote a letter to my clients, just like every other company has been doing the last couple weeks, right? I'm pretty sure everybody on this call has gotten an email from Best Buy or any place that they frequent. And I wrote this letter because a lady, one of my newer clients, came on and she said, Sarte, are you sure that this thing isn't going to be the end of the world and the start of the zombie apocalypse, right? So I wrote her a letter, personalized. I spoke to her fears and concerns. And I thought that all of my other clients needed to hear this exact same message. And to your point, Carl, I think that one thing that we can do as advisors is admit or be just as vulnerable as we expect our clients to be with us. So in that letter, I said, this has happened before. These are four other incidents in which we've had epidemics or pandemics, right?
the market has returned great. But the line that I feel like was the most vulnerable aspect of the letter that got the greatest responses was like, yes, we'll have to continue to see how this develops because I don't know, right? We're in this together. So take my hand, right? Call me as much as you want, right? And we'll get through this together. And I think sometimes as advisors, we expect them to just understand the plan, whether that's a one-page plan or a 32-page plan. But when they see their money and their dreams essentially withering away, I can't understand that, especially if I'm from a background which I've never had these funds and my money is all I have, right? I worked hard for this. So I think that we have to be just as vulnerable with our clients as they, as we expect them to be with us. And I think the better we do that, we become deeply connected to our clients and it makes that relationship a lot better. So I agree with you 100%, Carl.
With that, just to add on what you're saying, Desarte, what I like to do with my clients is I like to talk to them via analogies. I always use analogies when I speak with them. And so, you know, whatever the plan is, let's just say that the, you know, we're going to be over on the East Coast with you guys just for the sake of this illustration. And we're trying to get over to London where Carl's at. And I said, this is the difference between me as your advisor and many other advisors is when we're taking this transatlantic travel to get to your destination, whether it's retirement, saving money for the kids or what have you. I said, I'm going to get in the boat with you and I'm going to take the ride with you across the Atlantic. And so when we need to make adjustments and we need to have, when you have those fears and when you have those doubts or anything starts to get off course, you're going to look at me and I said this to you to start the other day when we were talking. So you got to captain that ship, right? We got to captain the ship for our clients. And so what we're doing is we're getting in the boat with them and we get to see their fears, but they also get to see ours is what you're saying, Desarte. They also get to see us like have a little bit of uncertainty and say, okay, I don't have all the answers, but I'm here with you and we're going to make this journey together. And I think those are good things to always try to make sure that you can use analogies, because I think that just really crystallizes things for people.
So wonderful perspective. I think that's great. And I want to add my two cents here on that. And I know this is not for every financial advisor, but I encourage financial advisors that are able to do this. Again, going back to Constitution, who you are. For the time being, I've stopped using my clients. Anybody that reaches out to me right now is my client. Right? Anybody right now is my client. So I've brought in the scope right now, and any financial advisor that has that ability, take it all on. And we have a responsibility now, I think, because again, we are so segmented in who gets our advice and our time and our expertise is that whoever it is, family, friend, person on the street, whoever, I'm taking it all. Because I think right now people need to hear from us and they want to hear from us. And even if it's a 2-minute conversation, we need to be very careful of this is, we can give a word that can affect people's life. So I've kind of stopped that. And again, it's not for every financial advisor, but for the financial advisors that can, I encourage you drop that for the moment until we get out of this and just start saying, you know what, whoever reaches out to me, because again, there's somebody that just got out of prison. He just got a job mopping floors. He was on the right path. He passed the dope dealers on the way to work and now he doesn't have a job. And you may be connected him through a cousin, an auntie, a sister, a brother, somebody you went to college with, and he's going to reach out. That should be a client too. Someone that you're having a conversation with in the grocery store, your actual clients as well. And I think any clients, our clients who quote unquote pay us, won't feel diminished because you are extending that. And I think those broader community, and just to be honest here, right? And shout to Lisa Allen if she's on. And I shared this with you guys. Lisa Allen sent me a DM saying that as she shared this, the perception was, well, what are they selling us? Why should we dial in? What are they selling us? And that's the perception of us. And the only way we break down that wall that has been for years now, years in this business, for people to understand, it is nothing in the world right now that is more important than me helping you financially right now, whether it's a kind word, it's a kind gesture, it's a connection, or simply giving time. So again, for the financial advisors that are listening, I would encourage you, whoever reaches out to you in that moment becomes your client. And if we do that, each one teach one, we all come out of this stronger and we'll be able to lift people out of their current circumstance into something that's a little bit prosperous, more prosperous for them and their families.
Tyrone, I think that what you're speaking to right now is servant leadership, right? You have to, in any relationship that you have, right? So this could be a client advisor relationship. You have to lead by serving. It's not going to mean you're getting a new invoice. It's going to say, well, this is the thing that I think you need to do. If that's your relationship in your household, you need to say, like, if these are my expectations of you, these are the things that I'm going to do for you, right? So we have to lead by first serving. And I think that's what every advisor is called to do, especially in this market cycle.
Yep.
I know we had a question that came. We had two questions come through. You guys want to tackle one of those? I guess the first one. What advice do you have for people who need cash right now to provide a bridge, whether it's 401k, loans, refinancing, personal loans, credit cards? And I'll just put that out to the group who wants to go ahead and fill that one.
Let Carl take that first.
Well, yeah. I mean, like what I mean, this question's come up a lot right now is I love going back to this micro action plan, right? Like, so let's just say that this question is, I need cash now. I don't know where to get it. I've got these. So what would we do? We'd say, okay, where could I get it, right? That would be question number one. So let's assume we come up with a list like listed here. I can get it from my 401k. I could get it by borrowing from my retirement plan at work called the 401k, right? I could maybe use a credit card. I could borrow from a payday loan, right? I could sell mom's silver, right? Like, so you make a list of those things. And then you just say, okay, which one of these? And you, by the way, you don't need enough money for 3 years, right? Like we need to solve the problem right now. And right now, most of us should be trying to buy time too, right? Like we're trying to buy time to get a sense of what this thing's going to do a little bit, like get more information. We're just taking micro action. So then you just look and say, which one of those sources is the least costly, right? Which one of those sources is the cheapest money I can get? So you just compare, like, what's the cost of getting money from my 401k? If it's actually just a 401k loan, I don't have any penalties or taxes. Well, that seems like a good option, probably better than a payday loan. You know what I mean? Like, so if my choice is between a payday loan and a cash advance on my credit card, well, then I got to look at those two. Which one's the least costly option, right? And sit down and calculate that, and then say, well, what's the micro action there, right? I don't need to blow up my whole retirement plan, or I don't need to sell everything in the house. I can sell a couple of things to meet my obligations next week, and then I can reset and see if my job comes back, or see if any of the sort of stimulus package stuff helps, or right. So we're just trying to buy ourselves a little time. So I would just make a list of the possible options and see which one's the least costly. Do that. And then we're back to that plan earlier. Reset, take the next action, right? So hopefully that's helpful.
Anybody else want to inject on input on that question?
Here's what I've been telling everyone to do and having conversations about three things. And I will shout to Kian for coming on, and I'll combine this with his question around the stimulus bill and what people are beginning. So three things. One, starting with, and I have everybody do this no matter what. Grab a white piece of paper, draw a line down the middle. Every piece of money that comes in the house on one side, everything that goes out on the other. Every single solitary thing on both sides. Look at the number at the bottom left. If so, things may be okay. At the bottom right, you got a number there, circle that. Now let's pair that with the last 3 months of all of your spending. Go back, pull 3 months of your checking account. We can see when you spent your money, how much you made, where you spent it, how often, or whatever. In there is going to be very lucid to you where you spend your money. Some things may have to be done now, crossed out, may not be able to do, cancel, whatever the case may be. Third thing is, right, if you are privileged enough where you are going to get that column on the left, that money is still going to be coming in or is lessened, right? You can compare that against, right, your expenses, which may be fixed, some may be variable, versus what you spent when times were great. Now things get lean, what can you cut out? And then lastly, as Kian said with that question is, I've started to have conversations with people, okay, well, how much of this stimulus money are you going to get? If you have children, if you are a couple, if you're single, now look at that in relation to the two things you should have done before and see, okay, what is the best way to utilize that money now when I get it? Because all of us know when you're at the bottom, and a lot of us that are for Black and brown communities, Lord knows we can spend money before we get it, right? And one check is gone and you like, oh, when the next one come, I got some, that's planned for too, right? So if we can do that for trips and jewelry and cars and everything else, we can definitely do it and say, okay, well, when this money comes in, this is what it's allocated for immediately, right? I mean, I still think automation in these days and times is still very helpful, but I think really getting people to understand, earmark the money now in relation to what your spending is and what your, you know, what comes in, and then kind of cobble those together and see if, again, like Carl said, you can have a plan for yourself moving forward.
I think that those are great recommendations. Cash flow analysis, Tyrone, right? Carl, the exercise that you mentioned. I think that advisors, though, moving forward, we need to plan for our clients with circumstances like this in mind, right? That down markets do exist. And I think that a lot of people have gotten away from the fact that markets are cyclical. So when you don't plan for these, the events where you're going to have to tap into that emergency fund, you see that the actions that you were making during that climb up were the wrong actions the whole time. You were being greedy at the wrong time and you weren't planning the right way. So I think that this is a great reminder for us that we have to stick to our fundamentals, stick to the rule of thumb, and make sure that we keep our clients accountable with those actions. Some of the best things that we can do when times are good is to save our clients from themselves. So when that person calls you and say, hey, I got an extra X amount of dollars, can I put that in the market? You need to be able to say, like, we have a plan and this is what you should do with that money as we have allocated. So I just wanted to add that tidbit.
Yeah. And I just keep thinking back to the power, almost like Phoenix sort of power of moments like this. Right? That you can, these moments sometimes force us, give us an opportunity, maybe a better word, but like force us to get clear about who we really are and what we really want. I remember in 2008-09, I remember sitting in, you know, like walking in the street or sitting in a restaurant and hearing people ask questions that I hadn't heard in 20 years. Like questions like, what's important to you? Questions like, who do I trust? Questions like, what do I really want from life? And this, I think, is an even bigger moment to do that, to get really clear. And one of those questions, man, if Tyrone, the sort of group you keep talking about, like, you can make a change. Like, the information, it seems overwhelming. I know it feels overwhelming because I remember it being overwhelming and it still feels overwhelming to me. But it's not. Like, we can get through this together. Like, if you're hearing this and you're wondering what to do next, any one of us can connect you to people that will help you without any expectation of anything, but this simple, like, let's build a basic spending plan. Let's track how we spend our money for a little bit. And I look, as soon as I use that word, I feel like, oh, terrible. No, we're going to, like, what if we started looking at budgeting as a path to freedom, right? Not like a way to beat ourselves up anymore. It's a path to freedom. And you're saying, look, I want out of this situation I'm in, guess what? You can get there. Like, it's easy for me to say sometimes, right? I know it's got to be brutally hard for many of us, right? But I have to keep believing that if we want to get there, we can get there, right? If we want to make changes in our personal circumstances, we can make changes in our personal circumstances. And the reason I keep believing that is we can point to people who've made their way out of whatever circumstances they were in. Right. And I can't imagine it because it's right. Like, but I can point to people who've made their way out of any circumstance they were in. You can do it. And this may be one of those moments that gives you a chance to think about that and say, look, okay, I'm going to do it. Like one small step tomorrow. One thing that's really interesting. Let me see if this works real fast. We'll do this at the end too. But one thing that's really interesting to me, I'm going to see if I can share my iPad real fast. Is how incremental, like we may be starting here, right? This may be this place that we're in, and I may even use red just to capture the moment, right? Like this may be the place we're in, and this may be like getting here, whatever that represents, may be unimaginable. And often it is. Like we've heard that story, like the best way to climb a mountain is one start. Sorry for the mountain references again, Tyrone, but the best way to climb Saddleback Mountain in Phoenix is one step at a time, right? What's the old, like, there's an old saying, the best way to eat a camel is one bite at a time, right? We all know that. But when you're staring at this thing, you're like, there's no way I can get there. There's no way. And all we're suggesting here is like, can we just take one small one small step in that direction, right? And then things level off, and another small step, and then maybe we backslide a little bit, and another small step, and another small step. And what happens over time is we do that if we can just keep repeating. And yes, this feels like crap. Oh man, I can't believe I did that again. And now we do this, and now we do this. And like, these are these moments when I call a friend and say, man, I don't know if I've got it. And somebody friend helps us, and we make a big progress. And maybe we're like, over time, this thing keeps going and we get there. What's crazy is none of this felt like we were making much progress, right? You don't like one step, you don't like what? That's not even worth it. That's why I like calling it a micro action. A micro action is so small, it feels like it's not even worth doing, right? But this didn't feel like much at the time, but this was a big deal.
Right.
Right. And so if we find ourselves in these moments right now, just find one small step, right? And there's people who can help you. There's a Google can help you. Like, we can make one small step. And it might feel completely worthless when you're staring this whole hill in the face, but it's not in the end. So anyway, I just think that idea of continuing to show leadership for ourselves, looking for others we can help. If we're talking to the industry now, looking for ways we can be helpful and make a difference in people's lives, super big. So thank you guys for sharing that.
Yeah, three quick things. One, I love what Hilton Kelly says here about isn't adversity glue? I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that. Adversity is glue. Anything that my mother always says, right? Nothing good comes easy. When you got to struggle and grind and build for things, man, do they last. And they endure any storm. Speaking of my mother, I did believe I heard you say backslide. So she would love that. Shout to Ross. Any backslide reference, she would love that. And lastly, for everybody that's on, you just got a live Carl Richards sketch, which is amazing. Yeah. So I hope you caught that. Like, that was free jewelry right there. For real, for real. So quickly, so again, I know you guys are super important. You have things to do. There's families and things to tend to, clients, everything else, and we all have to go wash our hands. But what I want to do now, and again, and then Carl, you can take us home, but I just want all of us to give some parting words and wisdom and thoughts to people as they log off of this. Because again, and shout to Tony Robbins, but the Tony Robbins effect, I call it, is like, you're around 1,000 people and you walk in on hot coals and you feel good. And then you get home and it's Monday and the car is still broken down and you got to get to work. So, let's focus on that and give people some strong parting words as we, as we move forward. So, DeSarte?
Yes, sir.
First?
Sure. I think the one thing that I think we should be reminding our clients of is that they're built for this. They can get through this, right? And we're here to help them get to each and every one of their financial goals. Again, as advisors, you are charged with a responsibility to push those ahead of you. So if, Tyrone Imlin, I consider you some of my role models, right? Push you guys to do better for your clients, to the individuals and the communities that you serve, and pull everybody behind me to do just as well, right? To come through that door and make just as much change. So push, pull. You're built for this. You can do this. And I look forward to seeing everybody prosper on the other side.
Emily.
Mine, I'll keep it. First of all, thank everybody for coming. And this has been great. I've learned a lot of stuff too, just listening to these other three great gentlemen. But what I wanted to say was, when you're meeting with your clients, the first thing that I would say is put yourself on a timer if you can. In 2 minutes, don't say anything. Just let them talk to you for 2 minutes. And I don't care if it's just during this. Not just during this time, but always. Listen for the first 2 minutes, because I think sometimes we will interrupt our clients and they will tell us what we need to know as their advisors to help guide them through this time now and forever. So 2 minutes, no talking. Let the clients tell you what they need to tell you.
All right, I guess I'm up. So a couple things. First thing is humble pie. And I always say this, I don't need to reach everybody on here. I need to reach one of you. Humble pie. We are in a situation where no matter where you stand, where you are, we all have to have a slice of humble pie. For the people that are listening and some of you that may have it the worst, I need you to do a couple things. Humble yourself. If you have to go to the discount basement barbershop, do it. If you have to be embarrassed, do it. If you have to have tough conversations with your family and your siblings and your loved ones, do it. If you have to go outside and cry and go on your knees, do it. If you have to go to friends and family and bow before them and just cry and need a strong word, do it. If you have to go to church, do it. If you have to go to the mosque, do it. If you have to do anything, if you need to play the lottery, if you need to go to a check cashing place, you need to go to payday loans, now is not the time to be embarrassed. Go do it. Hang on. Struggle. Persevere. Survive. Fight. Scratch. Claw. But do not quit. You will get through it. For every single person, again, not all of you, one of you right now is going to hang this up and you are going to cry. You are going to break down. You are going to take it to the limit of your human strength to persevere. But I challenge you in these moments. You are shaped in darkness. You are shaped in fear. You are shaped in iniquity and trials and tribulation. Go. Go right now is when you go. Go right now. Push. Because right now, when it's hardest, that step that you take that's the hardest, baby, when you get up, this is what you remember. And this is why every single person on here have pictures of family, of kids, of aunties, of uncles, of nephews in your phone, in your offices. And no matter where you are, focus on these kids. Focus on your children who are counting on you. Focus on the family that are fighting on you. Don't have a way. Stand, endure, take the bullets, drag your cross. Do not quit. Fight through it no matter what. Take the blows. Take the blows. Take them. But do not bow. Put your hands up. It's time to fight the bully. It's time to fight the bully. And when you fight him, you can't duck him no more, but put your hands up. And if he get the best of you, you walk away, but you fight another day. And on the other side of this, if we all chip in, and especially those of us that have the financial acumen and the privilege to put in the people who don't, I don't need all of you. I need one person to hang this up, fight, endure. It will get better. We will get through it. It is horrible right now. Nobody can tell you anything. None of us on here, but endure. Endure, endure, endure. And when you can't, go to bed, cry, and get up and fight another day.
Am I allowed to just say amen?
You can.
Yeah, so good. Here, let's just wrap up. My thought would be to wrap up with, let me just share one more thing on the screen here. If this works again, it worked pretty seamlessly the first time. Here we go. So here's my suggestion, sort of like all I have, is if you, right now with everything feeling so out of control, I find it really effective or really important to maybe make a list of things I can control, right? And things that matter. Sorry, it's hard to read. I'm holding it funny. Things that matter. Right. And what's interesting about a lot of, like, you could start with this list, the things that matter list. Right. That might be paying my bills. It might be the stock market return. It might be the federal government stimulus package. Like, those things may matter. Right. So you make a list of those things. And this is an exercise I would actually do. I'm doing this almost every day now. And then I make a list of things that I can control. You know, the stimulus package wouldn't be on that list, right? How I act, I can control my spending today, like whether I buy something here or there. Am I canceling something that I was planning on doing 3 months from now because I want the cash now? Those are things that I can control, right? And we just sort of match these up. When one's on both lists, right? When one's on both lists, that's what we focus on. And it looks a little bit like this, right? Things that we want to be focused. It's so easy right now to get caught up in, there are plenty of things right now that matter that you have no control over. I remember this image first came from an experience I had with my mom, who's just a saint. And my son was playing some sport at the time, lacrosse or football or something. And my mom was coming to the game, and he was like 10 or 11, right? And my mom, grandma was coming to the game, and I could see, those of you with mothers know what I mean. Like, I could see from 50 yards away that something was wrong. And she walked over and she sat down, and I said, "Mom, what's wrong?" And she said what all good mothers say, actually, when you ask them what's wrong. Nothing. Oh, nothing. Right. And I said, no, seriously, Mom, what's wrong? Now, my mom doesn't know much about the financial markets. She doesn't, like most of us, she doesn't know much about it. And she said, she took a deep breath and said, oh, the dollar. I'm just so worried about the dollar. And I've been in the financial services industry for 15, 20 years at this point. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, that's what I wanted to say. But I realized in that moment that my mom like was focused on something that, yeah, sure, it may matter, but she had no control over it. And to a large degree, she was there at a football game to watch her grandson. It didn't matter. It might matter globally, but it didn't matter right then. It wasn't going to matter the next day when she was supposed to be at church and instead she was spinning, worried about coronavirus, right? It wasn't going to matter the day after that when she was supposed to be on her 20-minute outside walk alone, right? I'm just using today's examples. And instead she was spinning around, worrying about that. So all I'm suggesting is that if we can get clear about the stuff that both matters and we can control and we can focus on this space, sometimes that space is only a sliver wide, right? If we can keep focusing on that, stop. Every time you start spinning, you come back here. That may be, for me right now, it's 100 times a day, right? Maybe 100 times a day. You're dying 100 deaths a day right now. Just keep coming back to the stuff that both matters and that you have some control over. To me in 2007 and 8, like I already told you, this was the only thing left here was my breath. Then that thing got bigger and bigger and bigger. So with that, Tyrone, I guess I'll throw it back to you just other than saying, you know, thank you so much to everybody for spending an hour and 15 minutes with us. And I want to just thank the three of you, like honored to be involved, like amazing. Thanks for everything you've taught me today and in the past and on Twitter and everywhere. Thank you. And for now, let's just all get through it together, right? Absolutely. Thanks, Tyrone.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all. Again, before we go, I don't believe in letting things go without, you know, missing the moment. And this has been very powerful. And he may not like that I'm about to do this, but I'm gonna let people know anyway. We all know that Carl Richards is an absolute superstar in our business and an incredible human being. So whatever people think of him as an advisor or speaker or whatever, he's more of an incredible human being. He led this. He followed up on it. He made his time available. And that, to me, is what this whole thing is about. Giving, the power of thoughtful giving. Also, DeSarte, who just moved across the country, giving his time and his expertise, and he's going to be a star. Incredibly grateful for what it means for him, for his face to be prominent. He is the future of this business. Emlyn, who has new family members popping up and families growing and servicing clients and building a business. And he's always taking the time behind the scenes. How are you, brother? Good to see you. I see you doing your thing. So again, for all of you, I am extremely appreciative and grateful. This does not happen with like minds and thoughtful hearts coming together. Thank you to everyone at Altruist for just throwing us together last minute, creating some beautiful promo that we can share and have on our social media platforms. But I'm grateful to every single one of you. Nothing is easy for any of us at this time. So for us to align for thoughtful giving, I'm truly appreciative. I'm thankful to every single one of you.
And we're thankful for you, Tyrone. We have to make sure that we give you credit where credit is due. You're amazing in terms of being a servant leader in our industry. You're an amazing advisor, you're amazing consulting, and an even better person. So as much as you are good at giving roses to the people around you and that align with your mission, we have to say thank you for being a servant leader and being an example of what giving looks like for us all. So thank you.
100%.
Amen.
All right. Emlyn, anything?
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. Amen.
I was just waiting for, like I said, a thank you. Thank everybody.
I've been to church in Philly. We better get an amen.
There you go. But like I was saying, man, thanks to everybody. And you know, thank you, Tyrone. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, DeSarte. And I'm just happy to be here and be able to share some of the stuff that we've had on our heart. We've had these conversations, you know, separately. And I think that this is something that needs to happen again more frequently. And yeah, I mean, I'm pumped. I don't even know what to say. I'm excited.
I love it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in next week. New edition of the Human Advisor Podcast. Go check it. It's been an awesome experience to do the first one live. We're grateful for everybody. Be well. Be appreciative. Be grateful. Please hang up here. Go wash your hands and save a life today. I appreciate you all.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be.